Henry Hill is one of the most famous mob associates in history. He was affiliated with the Lucchese family for more than 20 years before flipping and informing on the family to the FBI. I'm Brian McCoy. Welcome to the Mob Files. Hello everyone and welcome into episode 8 of the Mob Files. Our subject this week is Lucchese associate turned FBI informant Henry Hill. I chose this subject due to the unfortunate passing of Ray Liotta last week. Liotta played Henry Hill in Goodfellas, which was based on Hill's life. In my opinion, it is one of the best movies of all time, and Liotta was fantastic in it. I apologize in advance if I ramble a little bit about my favorite scenes. Alright, let's dive in. Henry Hill Jr. was born on June 11, 1943, in Manhattan. He was half Irish, half Italian. He grew up in Brooklyn along with seven siblings. The Lucchese family had a strong presence in Hill's neighborhood, and it didn't take long for him to take notice. As depicted in Goodfellas, Paul Vario's crew hung out at a cab stand across the street from Hill's house. Henry started working there at the age of 11. Well, it would probably be more accurate to say he worked for the mobsters who hung out there. He performed various tasks for them. Goodfellas opens with Henry Hill saying, "As far back as I can remember, I always wanted to be a gangster." And from researching his life story, it's clear that that was absolutely the case. He idolized the mobsters. He idolized Paul Vario's crew. He wasn't interested in school. He wasn't interested in any other job except working for them. He wanted to be them from the very beginning. Paul Vario was born in 1914 in New York. He became involved with the Lucchese family, eventually working his way up to become a captain. Vario operated his crew in Brooklyn, running a number of rackets, including loan sharking and bookmaking. He also owned several legitimate businesses, including the cab stand where Hill started working. Henry got his first taste of criminal activity after starting at the cab stand. He was responsible for picking up loan payments on behalf of Vario and other members of the family. Just as in the movie, Hill poured gasoline into the cabs of the rival company and set them on fire. Remember, this is all as a young teenager. He was arrested for the first time at the age of 16 for trying to use a stolen credit card. As shown in the film, Hill refused to cooperate with the police, earning him the respect of the crew. It was around this time that Hill first met Jimmy the Gent Burke. In the movie, a young Hill is shown to be in awe of Jimmy when he meets him. You know, Jimmy comes into the room and immediately has everybody's attention. He's talking to everybody, he's giving big tips to everybody, including Hill. And apparently this is an accurate portrayal of Jimmy Burke. Despite not being a made guy, despite only being an associate, he really did have that much sway and power. He was one of the most feared and, of course, respected criminals in the whole city. Burke was played by Robert De Niro in the film. They just changed his last name to Conway. Alright, getting back to Henry Hill here. Hill enlisted in the army in 1960. He served for 3 years and then returned to New York. He had stayed in contact with the crew while in the military, which allowed him to pick back up right where he left off and re-enter the criminal life immediately. Just a few years later, in 1965, Hill started dating Karen Friedman, who was played by Lorraine Bracco in Goodfellas. As you will hear, Hill was involved in several large scores during his days as a mob associate. The first of these occurred in 1967. I'm talking about the Air France robbery at JFK International Airport in New York. Air France returned exchanged American currency from Southeast Asia to be deposited in U.S. banks, so at certain times there was a lot of cash in a storage room at JFK. Hill worked with a number of different people on the heist, including an employee of Air France who had knowledge of when the money came in. Hill had completed the important initial step of stealing and copying a key from the security guard at the storage facility. The inside guy tipped them off about a delivery on April 7, 1967. Hill and Tommy DeSimone, who was portrayed by Joe Pesci in Goodfella, used the copied key to enter the storage area while the guard was on break. They were able to get away with $420,000, going completely unnoticed for a few days. Henry used some of his money from the Air France robbery to buy a restaurant in New York City. It was here that the infamous Billy Batts murder occurred. Like in the movie, Tommy DeSimone was pissed at Batts for what he perceived as an insult when Batts joked with him about how he used to shine shoes. This interaction inspired one of the most famous movie quotes of all time when Batts told Tommy to go home and get his fucking shine box. You can't go more than a couple minutes in a conversation about mob movies without that quote coming up. In the movie, Hill, DeSimone, and Burke killed Batts that same night. In reality, the murder happened a few weeks later, in June of 1970. According to Hill, DeSimone and Burke beat the man to death, then the three of them buried the body on Burke's friend's property upstate. Unfortunately for them, the property was sold a few months later to a real estate developer and they were forced to move the body. Hill said in his book that they had it crushed in a compactor at a junkyard in New Jersey. Hill was a little inconsistent when it comes to this story, but all versions end with the body in a compactor. The murder put Hill, DeSimone, and Burke in a dangerous position. Billy Batts was a made guy in the Gambino family. Harming, especially killing, a made guy is a big no-no without the proper authority, especially by associates who aren't made themselves. It was imperative that they keep the hit a secret for their own safety. Years later, in 1979, DeSimone went missing. It's believed that the Gambinos ordered a hit on him, however, it's hard to say if it was specifically because of the murder of Billy Batts. The reason for that is because DeSimone was also rumored to have killed another Gambino associate. The movie portrayed DeSimone as something of a wild card, but they honestly might have understated it. Thomas DeSimone was born in 1950 in Massachusetts. He met Paul Vario when he was a teenager and quickly started working with Henry Hill. The spider incident in the movie was apparently very accurate. Tommy really did shoot a guy just for forgetting his drink and then killed him 2 weeks later when the guy tried to stand up for himself. On another occasion, Tommy beat a warehouse foreman to death after being asked by Burke to rough up the guy so he would cooperate in their schemes. And of course, as I noted earlier, Tommy also killed that other Gambino associate. The associate had threatened DeSimone after Tommy beat up his sister. He responded to the threat by killing the man shortly thereafter. I was somewhat joking when I said Goodfellas may have actually somewhat understated DeSimone's craziness. Even going just off the movie, it's not hard to see why Hill later referred to him as a psychopath. Suffice it to say, Tommy DeSimone was a little more than a wild card. Henry Hill faced his first major legal trouble in 1972. He and Jimmy Burke had traveled to Tampa, Florida to collect a debt. Unlike in the movie, they did not threaten to feed the man to the lions, but they did give him a severe beating. It was also true that the man had a sister who worked in the Tampa FBI office. She filled the right people in, and Burke and Hill were scooped up quickly by the feds. They were both convicted of extortion and sentenced to 10 years in prison. The hustle didn't stop for Hill while he was in prison. He sold drugs and ran betting operations while inside. After he was released early in 1978, Hill started selling drugs outside of prison as well. He worked on this endeavor with Burke, but they couldn't involve the actual mob members. The Lucchese family did not want to be involved with drugs because the potential lengthy sentences would make people more likely to flip. Just a few years later, the drug business would land Hill on the wrong side of the law. Before that, though, he had a few more scores up his sleeves. The Lufthansa heist of 1978 was, at that time, the largest cash robbery in American history. Nearly $6 million, which is around $24 million in today's dollars, were taken. The heist was orchestrated by Jimmy Burke. I have referenced Burke a few times in this episode, and now is a time to get to know a little bit more information about him. Jimmy Burke was born in 1931 in New York. He had a very rough childhood, during which he was subjected to abuse by various foster parents. In his 20s, Burke became associated with Paul Vario's crew. Vario instantly liked Burke. Jimmy wasn't afraid to get his hands dirty, and he was also a great earner. He eventually bought a bar in New York that was used to launder a lot of cash for the family. He became something of a mentor to Henry Hill as well as other young members of the mob. As I mentioned, he was sent to prison along with Hill in 1972 for extortion. Like Hill, Burke got out early, but he served 6 years of his sentence as opposed to Hill's four. The heist occurred very soon after Burke's release. Like I said, it was orchestrated by Burke, but it was actually Hill's idea initially. He had found out from a source that the airline flew in large amounts of cash to JFK. Hill didn't actually participate on game day, though. After the successful heist, Burke became very paranoid and murdered many of the people involved with it in an effort to protect himself from law enforcement. One of the other major schemes Hill is known for is the Boston College point shaving scheme in 1978. The scheme was the idea of the Perla brothers, Rocco and Anthony, in Pittsburgh. Rocco had a childhood friend on the Boston College men's basketball team. The idea of the scheme was to make sure the team didn't cover the spread in certain games. Basically, the players would keep the team from winning by too much. The brothers wanted to make sure they maximized this opportunity, so they reached out to some people with more pull in the gambling world. Eventually, things led to Hill. Hill then brought in Burke, who was needed to help finance things. He had the deep pockets. They got the approval from the Lucchese family and things were good to go. Hill met on numerous occasions with the Perla brothers and with various Boston College players to choose the games and expected outcomes. The first game lost the bettors a lot of money and they were obviously upset about this. Up to that point, only one player had been involved, Rick Kuhn. After that first game, though, they brought in more players to increase their chances. there were 9 total games impacted, 4 of which were wins for the bettors, 3 were losses, and 2 pushes. This was one of the many subjects Henry Hill testified about after he flipped. Ultimately, Burke, the Perla brothers, and 2 others were indicted. Hill was spared because of his testimony and was listed as an unindicted co-conspirator. All of the defendants were convicted under RICO and bribery charges. Rick Kuhn got 10 years in prison, Anthony Perla did as well, Rocco Perla got 4 years, and Jimmy Burke got the harshest sentence at 12 years. As I discussed earlier, Hill had gotten involved in the drug trade while in prison. He ended up getting arrested on drug charges in 1980. Staring down a long prison stint, Hill chose instead to flip on Burke and others in Vario's crew. To be fair, there were other factors at play that made Hill go this route other than just the potential long sentence. He was convinced that Burke and Vario were going to have him killed due to his drug use. It wasn't an unreasonable thing to think. The family had clearly banned selling drugs and Hill had broken that rule. And while Burke had broken the rule as well, he came to view Hill as erratic and as a threat. Taking this all into account, Hill made the decision to become an FBI informant. When Henry Hill became an informant, he went all in. He told authorities about the Lufthansa heist, the basketball point shaving scheme, murders he had witnessed, everything. He maintained that he had never actually killed anybody but did help bury a lot of bodies. He also stated that he witnessed 10 murders personally. His testimony led to nearly 50 convictions. This includes Jimmy Burke and Paul Vario, who both ended up dying in prison. Obviously, Hill was no longer safe after he flipped. He can't just turn on a mafia family and continue as is, especially not one of the 5 families. Hill and his wife Karen, along with their 2 children, were put into witness protection and given new identities. The first stop for them was in Omaha, Nebraska. They would go on to live in a number of different locations, but Karen filed for divorce in 1990. The end of the marriage is a crazy story in itself. Hill had actually married another woman while still being married to Karen. He also couldn't stay out of legal trouble while in the program. He was arrested for burglary, assault, and multiple driving while intoxicated charges. Hill was apparently thrown out of the program in the late 80s. After this, he became a sought-after man for TV appearances, advising roles on documentaries about crime, among other things. Even in his later years, he still struggled to stay on the right side of the law. He was arrested on drug charges in 2003 and 2005. Henry Hill died on June 12, 2012, at the age of 69. He lived out his last years in Los Angeles with his girlfriend Lisa Caserta. Hill lived a fascinating life. He was exposed to the mob at a very young age and was heavily involved for more than 20 years, only to turn on the family and put multiple high-ranking figures behind bars. I did my best on today's episode, but I certainly can't top Ray Liotta's performance in Goodfellas. So your best bet might be to go rewatch that and enjoy one of the best movies ever made. Thank you so much for listening to episode 8 of The Mob Files. If you enjoyed, be sure to subscribe and leave a review on your listening platform of choice. Thanks again and have a great day.